Welcome to the greatest radio show in the history of the universe.
Dan Bickley.
The greatest of all time.
Vince Murata.
This is the greatest radio show of all time.
Bickley and Murata.
You're listening to the greatest radio show that has ever existed.
This is the greatest radio show.
The greatest thing ever.
It is.
Bickley and Murata.
The greatest ever.
You can't get excited about this. You might not be able to be excited.
Greatest of all time.
It's crazy.
Legendary.
So that's is this show.
Absolutely.
This is the greatest radio show of all
that's,
time.
That's right. Doesn't get any better than this. Leave us.
And Murata.
It's going to be lit.
It's the greatest thing in the world. I love it. I love where this show is going.
Good.
I'm excited to be a part of it.
Good.
Happy Wednesday, sports fans. Good morning. How are you all doing? Dan Bickley, but no Vince Murata today. Filling in as he often does on Wednesdays. There's a weird correlation here that I think we need to explore. Luke Lipinski. Ladies and gentlemen, our Mariano Rivera in the house.
What's up, Beck?
How are you doing? How are you?
It is always Wednesday, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't know that. They told me that there's kind of like there's a pattern here.
Well, because we realized, Jarrett and I realized yesterday, every time Mark Schlereth or Jeremy Piven gets interviewed on this show, I'm
in.
Here.
You're in. That's
so,
right.
I don't know if that's like my really narrow specialty or what.
Yeah. The other thing that's going on here is Jarrett is in full-blown November beard mode.
Oh, is that's his excuse?
Well, that is his excuse, okay. And I notice this all the time. He actually looks better with a beard, I think. There are people who don't, but wear them anyways. I think Jarrett actually looks better. Yeah, I think, Eric, you look good in a beard. But
damn
Jarrett,
right.
But, yeah, but it's like, comparatively speaking, you kind of look the same with and without.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be caught dead with a beard. How often do you grow facial hair?
Not very often. I mean, sometimes I'll go like a week or something, but Jarrett's clearly let this go for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years at this point.
No, this is 12 days.
Oh. Is it real? Okay.
I shaved on November 1st. All right, so.
And you did this last year, too.
I did. It's just,
what is the purpose of you doing this?
Well, I'm bringing awareness to
Jarrett Carlin.
Myself.
Right, that's what you're doing. This is just like dressing up for Halloween, isn't it?
I would have a beard probably always because I hate shaving.
Okay.
But my face
it
itches so badly and it's horrible. So I'm sort of just trying bearing down to get through November.
That's the thing. The beard in Arizona is worse than anywhere else because it's just so dry at a certain point.
No, that's a good point.
You don't want to go through
That's a really good point.
Are you going to trim that down to just a mustache at some point or no?
Well, that's what I did. If you remember last year,
don't do that.
I had a big woolly beard
and
I slowly shaved it down. So the first time I had a big Fu Manchu and sideburns and then I... Oh, no. First, I had what do you call that thing?
I don't know. It's your face.
Oh.
Yeah. What, handlebar mustache?
No, like what? The sideburns that went into the mustache.
Mutton chops?
Mutton chops.
Okay.
Oh,
that's
baby.
What you should be doing.
Both a delicious tasting and looking.
Yeah. As cheese ball as it can get, that's what you're embracing. All right. So that's what's happening here. Let's start the show, Eric.
The Splash.
Splash.
The stories making waves in the sports world.
The Splash.
Cannonball.
All right, we have another moral victory for the Phoenix Suns. They lose to the Lakers last night in a game that seems to have a lot of people more happy than unhappy. I'm a little bit of both. I'm not as happy as a lot of people are today because I don't think the Suns played really good defense. In fact, their interior defense was kind of really shoddy at times last night. But I guess the fact that they had a chance to win against a really good team at home kind of furthers the narrative that they are legit. For real.
Yeah. When do we, and we're not there yet, but when do we get to the point where moral victories don't matter? There's no way it would be 10 games into this season. I'm happy with what I saw last night for the most part. But is that later this year? Is that 3 years from now? Like, what is that?
It's a great question. It's really good question because I think what it does is it shows how traumatized we really are as a sports market.
Really, really does.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like this is kind of exposing all the wounds and all the stuff that we've swallowed for 10 years, where this is like a cause for celebration.
Well, we do it with every team. So you're right. It is the sports market.
Yeah.
We're excited about the Cardinals that do have three wins.
This is the year of moral victories because things have been so bad that we couldn't even get moral victories the last few years.
No, you're right. And that's in I don't know whether this is a deep psychosis or just a really good time to be alive in Phoenix, Arizona.
Or both.
Or
we've been demoralized so long,
right.
The moral victories, we need them right now.
I don't know, man. This is kind of like it's that whole concept of habituation. You get hit enough it becomes normal.
Yeah.
Right? And then suddenly, yeah, hit me in the face. That's what I know. And then suddenly somebody comes up and they're, hey, what's up, man? They're not, well, you don't want to hit me in the face?
Yeah, what was this handshake you're trying to pull? Yeah,
right? What are you trying to pull here?
We can hang with the Lakers when they have LeBron and Anthony Davis, and it's not insane to think that. What's going on here?
All right, we're
going to
explore this coming up in a matter of seconds. The Cardinals are preparing for the 49ers. The David Johnson backlash has kind of reached peak level. I might have contributed to it with an acerbic piece today in ArizonaSports.com.
Yeah.
But I don't smell a happy ending with this. And I suppose that the people who are optimists are going, all right, this Sunday against San Francisco, this is the chance. This is when you got to do it.
I've been doing that for a while.
Same here.
We played a game watching the Cardinals game on Sunday. A couple of us were watching it. It was just, don't look at the number. Can you tell if it's Kenyon Drake or David Johnson running the football? You could tell with 100% accuracy. Because one of them was running and the other one wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really, you know what? So for so long, you could have that argument about, well, you know, the numbers aren't bad. He doesn't look good, but the numbers aren't bad. This is a day where the numbers were bad and he looked just awful. And you wonder what in the heck is going on. We're going to explore that further today. All right, I want you to chime in on this because the Coyotes beat the Blues in a shootout, which means, and they did it the day after beating the Caps in D.C. in a shootout, which means in consecutive days they beat successive Stanley Cup champions.
Yes.
What does that mean?
On the road, they're the first team to ever do it in NHL history.
With two different goaltenders in the process.
Well, yeah, it helps when you have two number one goalies that you can just throw out there because typically in a back-to-back, you're not conceding the second game. But you're kind of like, okay, our backup's going to play one of those games and there's going to be a drop-off. And usually the backup's playing behind a tired team. The Coyotes have the luxury of having two number one goalies. They probably have two of the best 10 goalies in the NHL. And yeah, first team in NHL history, which is like 105 years now, to beat the last two cup champs back-to-back nights.
Yeah. And I've seen you tweet about this hockey team. And you do know more about hockey than most everybody in this state. What do you want to say about the Coyotes and their start?
It's legit. I mean, it's the way they're winning is the way they were built to win, so it's sustainable. And you can only take so many injuries. They have a big one on defense right now, but they're one of two teams in the NHL that could take an injury to a goalie and still be okay. You don't want that, but you could still be okay.
Take that, Coyotes fans who claim we never talk hockey on this show. Take that. All right, the college football.
Now to never speak of it again.
The college football playoff rankings have come out. It's LSU leapfrogging Ohio State, which everybody expected. Ohio State second, Clemson third, Georgia fourth. Then Alabama, which is ranked ahead of Oregon right now. Which I'm not sure I get, but yeah. Okay.
It's inevitable that Alabama gets back in, right? I think Alabama could lose again and still somehow get back in.
Lose out.
Yeah, they pull this garbage every year.
They
like,
do.
Look, we dropped him out of the top four, and then they will be back in no matter what.
Now, people go, well, you know what? Alabama's loss is to LSU, who's number one, and Oregon lost to Auburn. The difference is Oregon went on the road to play Auburn in a non-conference game.
Yeah, and also,
Alabama hasn't done anything like that.
I don't even care about Oregon. Minnesota is undefeated and just beat a top four team.
And they're eight. They're eight.
Here's the problem with that argument against Oregon. Alabama will close out against Auburn, so the team that beat Oregon 3 months ago at that point. And when they beat them by three, everybody will be like, look, beat Auburn.
They beat Auburn. Yeah, Auburn beat Oregon.
If Oregon beats Utah, that's better than any team that Alabama will beat.
But down the road, will it be perceived that way?
It won't be perceived that way.
Because all the politics and all the spin is coming. Nick Saban's going to be making that trip to Bristol. He'll spend a day in the car wash. He'll go on every ESPN show lobbying for his team. He's done this before.
Well, and they've got that big game against Western Carolina coming up November 23rd. So when they beat them by 85 after he builds them up all week, they're going to be like, look, a huge win, too. A big lopsided win going into Auburn.
This could be the year where three SEC teams kind of snake into this thing.
I think that's what college football wants. I think they just want four SEC teams. Why even have the other conferences?
I know. It's a good point. You're right. That's kind of where this whole thing is spinning. All right. Finally, Major League Baseball, a story that we have to get to today because people know my deep hatred of the Houston Astros. It got to the point where it influenced the way I was thinking. It took my philosophies and my morals and the way I view sports, and it really jacked them up during the World Series. Now it turns out that the Houston Astros may have been cheating extensively throughout the 2017 regular season. There is testimony on the record from two players who gave their names to The Athletic.
Yeah.
Who detailed a system of sign stealing that Houston used that was beyond the pale. It was beyond using some 85-year-old dude with a real sharp set of eyes who's sitting there trying to crack the code with his eyes. This is high-tech stuff that they're being accused of.
And that's the slippery slope, right? I know some people today and yesterday are saying, big deal, everybody cheats. It's different. I mean, when you start using technology and you're cheating to that extent that they allegedly were,
yeah,
you're basically... It's such a slippery slope because you're forcing other teams to do it, too. So is that where we want the sport to go? If you're really doing this.
Yeah. No, it's not where you want the sport to go. We're going to get into that as well. Those are the items we are getting into today on a Wednesday. Luke Lipinski in for Vinny Murata. Now, Jarrett, is there anything we need to cover right now so this show continues to roll like a well-oiled machine?
Cover your mouths.
Okay. Yeah, I did. So we're good, right?
We're good. Right. Move on to the
Let's
first
move one. On. All right. The Arizona, not the Arizona Cardinals. I was going to mention Kyler Murray in context of the Suns because there was a moment last night at the Suns game that I want to hit first when LeBron James kind of shook hands with Kyler Murray, kind of respected each other. Kyler Murray did not opt for the sanitizer, got his hands right back into his gummy bears. Not what I would have done.
He was dominating those gummy bears.
Not what I would have done in that situation, no. But then again, it's LeBron James. Part of the scene in downtown Phoenix last night, big-time basketball game. A lot of celebs came out for the game. Aaron Judge was there. Cody Bellinger, Chandler Jones, Terrell Suggs. All those guys were there. The Suns played a good game. They were up by one with 2:13 left. They couldn't defend Kyle Kuzma at the end of the game. They didn't make their own big shots. And they walked away with a palatable loss, okay? A loss that seems to continue this garnering of respect, not just locally, but nationally.
Yeah, I think that's... I mean, the biggest thing that stood out to me about that game going into it was the fact that this is a Suns-Lakers game that matters outside of downtown Phoenix. You know, it had gotten to the point, not like the Lakers have been good, and I don't know where you come out on this. I mean, to me, I know the Suns have missed the playoffs for 9 years and maybe counting. To me, it's been the last 4 years that have been embarrassing and unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lakers haven't been good those 4 years either, but nationally, I feel like people were watching that game last night thinking, okay, we're going to see the Lakers with LeBron and Anthony Davis. You know what? The Suns don't look that bad. Let's maybe check them out again in a week.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. The Suns, before the game, got props from LeBron James. After the game, they got props from Lakers head coach Frank Vogel. Called that team a really good basketball team. I'm going to combine a couple of things that I said earlier. I know there's a lot of... there's some optimism coming out of last night's game, certainly over the first 10 games. I thought the Suns' interior defense looked very much like last year and the year before that to me. It just, there was not a whole lot of obstruction going on down there. And they allowed the Lakers to score 70 points in the paint. There were a lot of uncontested dunks. There was just a lot of stuff that I thought they were better than, believe it or not. But maybe the fact that they played that kind of porous defensive game and still had a chance to beat a team like the Lakers is a good sign. And maybe this is just a continued sign that, like you said, with the Coyotes, that kind of speaks to the sustainability of what we're watching with this team.
I think, I mean, with these moral victories that we're all getting really well practiced with.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
It for me, it's always this is a moral victory if they go out there and win 6 more of their next 10 or 7 more of their next 10. Next time they play the Lakers, maybe they beat them. If they go on a losing streak now, then it wasn't a moral victory.
No, you're right.
You know what I mean? So yeah. It's we still have to kind of wait and see what they do coming up. But there was a lot of good in that game just because, I mean, the Lakers might win the title this year. And
yeah,
it's not like years past where the Lakers showed up and one of their guys didn't play or a really good team comes to town and Anthony Davis sits, you know?
Yeah. Here's where the Suns failed last night. They got balanced scoring, but they didn't get a giant game from Devin Booker.
You kept waiting for him at the end of the game, especially
kind of,
to take over,
kind
and
of,
he just couldn't get it going.
Kelly Oubre did not have a good game at all. He wasn't even on the court at the end of the game. Cam Johnson was. Cam Johnson made some big shots, and he showed why the guy can be a weapon in certain situations. But I just think defensively it was kind of a fail for this team. The Lakers shot over 50%. They've been struggling with their field goal percentage. They gave up way too many interior points. So, and again, but maybe I'm going to twist that into a positive, that they can that they didn't play their best game and then almost won. They played a kind of flawed game, but still hung.
Well, Kelly Oubre basically didn't show up, and DeAndre Ayton definitely did not show up.
No, he didn't.
So, he showed up. He had to. Why is this mic? He showed up, but he had to leave 2 hours before the game.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So, I mean, it doesn't work this simply, but you have to look at that game last night and say, wait, if they had DeAndre Ayton, the Lakers aren't getting so many uncontested shots from in close.
Yeah.
And you're right. I mean, the Lakers are a team that has struggled to shoot this year, so you want to make them shoot a little bit further away from the basketball or from the hoop. But, I mean, at the same time, it's also Anthony Davis. DeAndre Ayton's not on his level. This is why it was such a big deal. Yeah. The Lakers got him.
Right. That's exactly right. And the Lakers have two of the top five players in LeBron and Anthony Davis. So I think there's no questioning the credibility that the Lakers are going to be a team that should be a top four seed in the West this year. So in terms of that, yes. So last night's loss was another acceptable morale victory. And at some point in time, those probably have to end. They don't have to end now. Not 10 games through the season. Because as of now, these kind of performances are enough for people to really believe that the Suns have finally got their act together. Now, back to our first point at the start of the show. The idea that this area is kind of carrying some sort of psychological trauma from this basketball team over the course of 10 years, I think there really is something to that, because clearly Suns fans are just very, very forgiving, number one, and number two, willing to just take little baby steps as progress as though this is good enough. That sort of reflects to you or to me, to anybody, just how bad they were and how embarrassing they were to own as an NBA team. That, okay, this is good enough because we know that what they're giving us now, competitive basketball games against good competition, looks to be sustainable because they're doing it consistently and they're doing it without DeAndre Ayton.
Yes.
And we all have the hope that, you know, whether or not you think DeAndre Ayton is just fine in his evolution, or if you're like me and you're a little uncomfortable with the way the guy rolls, the fact is he'll be an addition to the team when he comes back.
Yeah.
And hopefully he'll be humbled. Maybe he'll be more woke.
I mean, if all it is the difference is that it'll be him and Baines guarding an Anthony Davis instead of Kaminsky trying to guard an Anthony Davis or Saric trying to guard Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
It's another big body with talent.
And what you're basically saying is that last night was the first real game where you kind of went, oh, they could have used this guy.
Yeah, pretty. Yeah. I mean, there's a
That's
couple of games
felt.
You look
That's
and
what
say,
I felt.
What was?
And it's not because Baines was great. He's unbelievably consistently good.
Yes, he is.
Which I thought by now he'd have like one of those normal Aaron Baines type games, you know, through his career.
Yeah.
But he's been consistently really good. So I'm not saying that when Ayton comes back it's good because he could take over for Baines. It's more that like he'll help out the backup situation.
I felt
not
like,
that he's going to back up, but you know what I mean.
I felt like they would have beat Utah too if they had Aaron Baines or DeAndre Ayton. I'm not saying they would have won last night if they had Ayton, but I do feel like they would have beat Utah if they had Ayton, and it certainly would have helped to have him last night. But again, Anthony Davis to me is the best big man there is.
Well, and yes, I agree with that. But even last night, JaVale McGee was getting off for the Lakers,
he just
had a parade.
Dwight Howard looked like the old Dwight Howard, not an old Dwight Howard.
Right? He's actually been decent this year, which is something I really don't want to recognize or look in the face.
No, and I can't, like, Dwight Howard, even on the bench when he was cheering, it doesn't feel right that he's there.
No.
Nothing feels right about it.
No, I completely am down with that. Now,
what a cool haircut, though.
Yeah, even the hair doesn't feel right. That's the thing. Even with Dwight Howard, I had to do, like, a triple take and be like, did they put somebody else's hair on Dwight Howard?
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
They put Vitaly Potapenko's over him. This is Monty Williams on the game last night saying that the Lakers were just stronger.
Well, it's just that they were just stronger. When you look at it, AD's driving to the basket, dunking the ball, or the seals in the paint. That was hard to stomach, but, you know, you can only scream 3 seconds so long, right? We just have to do a better job of keeping guys out of the paint. It's not like they have a dynamic point guard getting in the paint. It was just seals and post-ups and isolations getting to the basket. So a credit to them.
Take that, Rajon Rondo.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
And just another one real quick. This is Monty Williams on the team's fight.
Again, I told our guys, when they fight like that, it's hard for me to argue. You know, I'm sure if we won the game, they'd be saying the same thing I'm saying. So Our guys fought their tails off tonight. We had a chance. We missed a layup at one point to go up, I think. We had some open threes down the stretch. We just came up short.
I feel like the reason that we've, I don't want to say lowered our standards in context of last night's game, but just in general with the team, I mean, the last 4 years have been the four worst years in franchise history other than their first year.
Yeah.
If you just go by winning percentage, the last 4 years have been the four of the five worst. So it's only natural that we would be like, hey, wait, they're 6-4. Look at this.
Well, you're right. And the last 4 years were so bad that the Suns have been around 51 years. So you multiply 51 times 80-plus games a year. You got a big, big sample size of how long this team's been around. They once ranked fourth in the NBA in franchise winning percentage. The last 4 years dropped them all the way down to, like, seventh.
Yeah.
And to move that number, you've got to be really bad for a long period of time. And all of the stuff, all of the dumb stuff that they did that we just swallowed and hoped and waited and digested and hoped and waited, finally you get a year like this year where people feel like that's over now. Now, I hope they're right. Because you never know. You never know with this organization. 2 months from now, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The head coach resigns because of owner interference.
We're not doing that.
Okay, no, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
No, we're not doing that. We better not be doing that. But this is what the organization did before.
But let me ask you this, though. I since you're here and I'm here, I want to ask you this now instead of wondering this all season.
Yeah.
Part of the reason for me I'm good with last night's game is because they're still 6-4. If they were 2-8, but it was like, hey, they're 2-8, but they were close with the Lakers. Like, isn't that great? No, it wouldn't be. How long am I going to wonder how different this team would be if they had taken Doncic over Ayton?
Oh,
because Doncic might win MVP this year.
Yeah, no, I've been doing a lot of thinking about this because it was just.
And that's not James Jones' fault, and I like what he's doing, and I believe in this turnaround. I do. I think this is a team that's going to finish right around 500 this year. They're right around there now, and I'm not, you can ask that question. Like, the Ayton supporters get so freaked out if you mention Doncic might be better than Ayton. He is better than Ayton.
Oh, it's not even close.
That doesn't mean Ayton's bad, but I'm just saying, like, especially right now when Ayton's not playing, if you had Doncic in these games too, would he be as good as he is?
Well, that's a great question.
You wouldn't have Ricky Rubio, and obviously Doncic is better than Ricky Rubio, but because Ricky Rubio is good and doing well and really helping this team,
yeah,
I think it makes it a little more palatable.
Yeah, I'm honestly asking just how different would the team
be? No, but listen, I do think that this year's team success is the best thing that could happen to make that argument just a conversation point. Because if the Suns were garbage this year, that would be front and
that
foremost.
Would be a mess.
This is what we'd be talking about because this is the number one pick overall. And in the NBA, you can't mess those up. You can't. Or you're Portland.
Well, and my feeling has always been, even going up to the draft, was as long as Ayton's one of the three best players in that draft 5 years in, which he absolutely still could be, it's fine. You got one of the best players. But what was so weird to me was the pushback from people that were like, no, it's Ayton. Don't even mention Doncic.
Well,
like, okay, well, he might win the MVP this year.
Yeah, well, listen, and I was the exact same way. What I was not comfortable with during that whole debate, when we had buttons, remember that? We had Luka Doncic.
Jared still has him, yeah.
I thought DeAndre Ayton was going to be a better pick, but I was a big fan of Luka Doncic. There were a lot of people here who were not fans of Luka Doncic. I remember Gambo reporting about how he'd cry on the end of the bench. Remember that stuff?
No, a lot of people were dismissive.
As if he were really weak between the years. There were a lot of people who said this is a no-brainer. I was never in that category, and that mentality that this is a no-brainer, that scares me.
That's what worried me.
And this franchise, the fact that you thought this was a no-brainer. Now, I had limited exposure to DeAndre Ayton, okay? Watched him a handful of times in college, clearly the two ASU games that skewed a lot of our perspectives. I got to talk to him in depth at the NBA draft after he was selected. I thought he was a different guy. I thought he was more hardcore and less goofy than he is. And that goofiness is going to be his ceiling unless he changes it. And that's the way I feel about it. And if he doesn't raise up his game and raise up his ferocity, Because we know he can go 18-10 rolling out of bed.
Well, maybe the suspension does that to him.
It better.
Maybe instead of him coming back humbled, I don't really want him to come back humbled. I want him to come back with an edge.
Hungry. Okay, you're right. Maybe you're right. Humble's the wrong word. So I'm with you on that. I think what we're seeing now better be the moment, the spiritual epiphany for DeAndre Ayton. The moment where he goes, okay, you know what? If Aaron Baines can do that in the context of this team, then I better go 24-17, not 18-10.
Well, and to bring it all the way back around to last night's game, I mean, let's be real here. LeBron's not going to play forever. Maybe he will. I don't know. But at a certain point, if you're going to go through the Lakers, you're going to have to go through Anthony Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, I'm not sitting here burying DeAndre Ayton. I think he can be one of the three best players from that class. But it's what you said. It was the dismissiveness of, it's Ayton. Why would we even look at another player?
Yeah.
Well, because
yeah.
you have the first pick in the draft. That's yeah. why you would look at the other players. You're going to need Ayton to be one of those top players because the Lakers went out and got Anthony Davis. And I think he can be that guy. But I'm interested to see how this suspension impacts him mentally.
All right, coming up, the Arizona Cardinals have lost three games in a row. You've got a division game against the 49ers, and guess who is under the microscope? Yep, David Johnson. We're talking about him next. Luke Lipinski filling in for Vinny. I'm Dan Bickley. You're listening to Arizona Sports 98.7 FM.
Welcome back to the Bickley and Murata Show. Luke Lipinski in for Vince Murata on this Wednesday morning. Cardinals 3-6-1 heading into this weekend's matchup with the 49ers. I gotta say, I'm pretty excited about this game. I would assume Kenyon Drake's pretty excited about this game because he ran pretty well last time they played the 49ers.
Yeah.
But I don't know what to think about David Johnson anymore.
Is David Johnson excited about this game? That's kind of the question here. David Johnson has become one of the real polarizing talking pieces with the Phoenix Suns, and it's obvious why. Last week against the Buccaneers, it was almost pathetic looking, watching him try to run the ball, taking handoffs, running laterally, slowing down to lessen the impact, refusing to get in between tackles, not showing any burst. There are three, by my count, there are three potential scenarios here.
Okay. Are any of them good before you rattle them off? Are any of them going to make me feel better about this?
Maybe.
Okay.
Scenario number one, the one that could make you feel better, is that he's still hurt, that he doesn't trust his ankle, that his body's not 100%. I'm not really buying this one because I think the team would see it in practice, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They would kind of go, all right, but we can't give the ball to him. He's got no juice. That's number one, that he's just physically not well.
I'm going to buy a little bit of it.
All right.
And you're right. Maybe that's me just being hopeful. I'm going to say he's not 100%. And because of previous injuries, that's why he looks hesitant.
All right. Number two would be he has just lost his taste for battle. And this is something that has happened to running backs growing up in Chicago. People who follow the Bears, they'll remember Neil Anderson. It once happened to him. He just got tired of getting pummeled and just said, I'm done. And it's Robert Smith. I'm done. I'm not ruining my post career for this. David Johnson, we know that he has been, through his own interviews with us, we know that his wife has tripped on occasion when he's been injured. She cares for him very deeply, and she has asked him to quit the game of football. Now, again, we should all be lucky to have somebody who cares for us in that kind of way. So I'm not trying to cast any aspersions on his spouse. That is not what I'm doing at all here. So this is not somebody blaming David Johnson's wife for the Cardinals 3-6-1 record.
No.
And my fantasy team stinks. that's not what I'm doing here. But what I am doing is, if the thought's in David's head and David's sick of it, and David's got the blessing of his family, then maybe it's time for David to just stop playing football.
Well, and it is the worst position to play, too, because you're just getting hit on every single
repeatedly.
Play.
Repeatedly. And it's clear that if you're looking for why a guy would be productive in the passing game and not the running game, there's your answer.
Yeah.
There's your answer.
Right? Because there's a reason. I mean, you can get hurt playing any position on the field. I get that. But as a running back, you're getting hit every time you have the ball, and you're getting hit every time you don't have the ball because you're blocking.
And you're getting hit every time by the biggest guys on the football field.
Yeah.
And you get to the second level, it's not as bad. It's really, really not.
And you're not hitting them, too. I mean, they're just hitting you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not like an offensive lineman and defensive lineman ramming into each other. You're just getting hit constantly.
All right, Jared, I hope you have the sound handy. This is what David Johnson told us in an interview fairly recently, I want to say. But it was during one of the injuries, and it was David Johnson admitting the pressure that he feels.
This is from May of last year.
May of last year.
Talking about his wife's reaction to the knee injury he had suffered.
She was very mad. That's when she told me to quit playing.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
And how serious was she?
She was very serious. The biggest thing, though, is because she didn't go to the game. And she was trying to call everyone that she could to find out what was exactly wrong.
Right.
And she called Anthony Edwards, and she was just panicking, and she wanted to know exactly what was wrong, and she didn't find out right away. And I think that's the biggest thing, not knowing what was wrong.
And then there's one more cut. This is him, how he talked his wife off the ledge of being so worried and wanting him to retire.
How did you talk her off the ledge? Did you say, listen, baby, I'm good. I don't get injured that easily. I've got great genetics. How do you talk a partner off the ledge with stuff like that?
That's what it was. I said, look, it looks worse than it is. It's only a grade two. The only thing that is just swelling. And I told her that, you know, I was blessed for that to happen. I think God has taught me, and he's telling me that I still could still be playing this sport, and that, you know, I love this sport.
Yeah.
I love this sport, and I want to play as much as I can, as long as I can. And I think once her adrenaline came down, once she calmed down, you know, she came to her senses and stuff.
Now, we all know David Johnson is a people pleaser. And we know the way he's reacted to criticism from his coaches in the past, that's very, very important to him. We know last year when he staged that sit-down strike during training, right before, when was it? When did he do that? Was it during minicamp?
It was OTAs, wasn't it?
It was OTAs.
It was like June or something.
Where he suddenly wasn't there when Steve Wilks was trying to get his new regime fired up. We all were like, this isn't like David Johnson. But something inside David Johnson was telling him to get paid, and he did. And that money, $31 million of that $39 million contract was guaranteed. 31 of it guaranteed.
And that's the thing. As a running back, I completely empathize with you got to get paid when you have the chance to get paid.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is, when you then get paid and have a bad season and you don't look right this season, you have to know you've opened yourself to criticism.
Without a doubt.
Criticism like this from Jay Feely.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm not very surprised. I saw it coming in the preseason, and I think if there's one thing that you point to me as an analyst looking at it, yes, he had injuries, but he also got paid, you know, and sometimes when you get a big contract, the willingness to take that pounding isn't there anymore, and that's what I see when I look as an analyst. You know, that's a very difficult, physically demanding position that you have to go in there and willingly sacrifice yourself every time you carry the ball. And I think sometimes you can lose some of that desire to take that pounding. And that's what I see when I watch him run.
Don't you sort of have to have that mentality of if you're going to run effectively, of just go ahead and hit me. Like, you have to have that mentality, right?
Without a doubt.
And what the strangest thing to me is, we talked about this on the pregame show on Sunday. You've got Kenyon Drake, Chase Edmonds, and David Johnson. I feel like I know the least about David Johnson. And Kenyon Drake's been on the team for 15 days.
That's really
Chase Edmonds is a second-year player that's a backup. David Johnson, this is his fifth year, and we've seen him have a historically great season, and yet going into just the rest of this season, whenever Chase Edmonds is back too, I feel like I know the least of what to expect from David Johnson.
Yeah, no, you're right on the money about that. So there's a lot that goes into that, and it doesn't make people feel good, especially when the Cardinals have all this money tied into them next year. And say if it is so bad that David Johnson's never coming back, cutting him next year is going to really influence the team's ability to spend lots and lots and lots of money on getting better. There's going to be, I think he's got $16 million in dead money, so it's going to be basically having another Sam Bradford on your salary cap.
No.
Well, that's what it's going to be like. That's
He'll
what it's
just be sitting
like.
In the cafeteria eating lunch every day.
Right. So this is kind of the thing. The third option in all of this that we have not discussed yet, and we'll get into it more later because we don't have the time now, but there are studies that show that running backs who have over 300 carries in a single season, especially later in life, either get real dead legs for a while or never come back. It's the overuse theory. David Johnson had 373 touches in 2016, overwhelming amount. He followed that up with 308 2 years later last year in that wacky offense. He might be shot. He maybe it isn't between the years. Maybe he just can't do it anymore because of incredible over usage.
But if that's it, if it's the third option, he can't do it anymore as a running back. And I was at the practice when Kingsbury was asked, you know, are you guys going to consider maybe moving him to receiver? And he just shot it down, and it wasn't even a thought. But that was the middle of the season. I mean, if you're going to get to the point this offseason, and this continues for the rest of this year, and let's say Kenyon Drake is looking like a better running back, wouldn't you at least try to make David Johnson a receiver going into next year rather than just cut him?
Yeah.
Because you also have Chase Edmonds.
Yeah. So you've got running backs.
You do, but the problem is that once you start lining David Johnson up as a wide receiver,
it's not the same.
It's not the same. He's going to start drawing press coverage. It's going to get real different. All right, on the other side, we're going to talk college football. The college football playoff rankings are out. What does it mean, and will Luke Lipinski's fear come true? Is Alabama going to sneak back in? Luke Lipinski, Dan Bickley, you're listening to Arizona Sports, 98.7 FM.
Oh, the production on this show is through the roof.
Right.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Luke production Lipinski, is, I wouldn't say the producers are.
Well, no, that's, you know, that's right. A whole different thing.
that's right.
Bickley and Murata Show, Luke Lipinski in for Vince Murata. College football, top four teams set for the playoff right now.
Yeah.
Were you surprised at all when they unveiled this, that Alabama specifically is not in the top five, or top four? They are in the top five.
No, but I do share your fear that there's a sense of inevitability that somehow they're going to be part of the playoff. For fun, I want to read you a story from Alabama.com.
This is not going to be fun.
This is going to be great.
Also, let me just say before you read it, it's not a fear I have that Alabama's going to be in. They are 100% going to be in. They just do this so they say, look, we dropped Alabama out, but then, you know, they beat Auburn that last week. How can we deny it?
Yeah, I know. It's depressing to be...
Auburn, who could have three or four losses, by the way.
Yeah, no, that only matters because they beat Oregon. It doesn't matter if
quote,
it hurts Alabama.
From Joseph Goodman.
Do it in a good Alabama accent, please.
No, I don't want to do that. The college football playoff committee must have a sense of humor. Either that or the whole thing is just one big joke. On Tuesday evening, the group of voters charged with putting together a playoff created a scenario that only a professional showman could devise. In the wake of Alabama's loss to LSU, the committee is now forcing Alabama fans to cheer for rival Auburn Saturday against Georgia. That's unnatural and blasphemous, but here we are. The college football playoff is pure hokum, but at least its nonsense is hysterical at the same time. The committee placed Alabama at number 5 in its new rankings, which is ludicrously too low for the Crimson Tide, and I'm going to stop right there. Ludicrously too low for the Crimson Tide.
Yeah.
Who beat
they
nobody.
Just lost at home.
Lost at home.
They were losing by 20 in the second quarter. Okay, they couldn't stop LSU, and that's ludicrously too low for the Crimson Tide.
It's the entitlement.
You see where this is going.
It's the entitlement.
They've beaten zero ranked teams.
How dare you? They beat Duke. I mean, they weren't ranked, but they were the best team named Duke in the country at that time. That doesn't do anything for you?
It would take the ghost of John Wayne.
Now, Alabama, look, they're in position to miss the college football playoff for the first time in its 6-year history. Oh,
get over
yourself. You talk about playoff privilege. Get over yourself.
Was it 2 years ago? It was 2 years ago when Hurts was the quarterback, and then they had to go to Tua in the championship game. If you recall, that year they were like 7th or 8th at one point, and with like 2 weeks left in the season. Because I remember having this conversation with a friend of mine, because we were like, they're obviously going to put Alabama in, and Alabama's going to win the whole thing.
Right.
But how are they going to do it?
Right.
And sure enough, things just either. There's always the mix of things playing out just right for Alabama, and then also Alabama gets every tiebreaker. If there's any tiebreaker, Alabama will get it. And then they get in there, and I mean, based on the eye test, I wouldn't want to play Alabama. Maybe they are still the best team, but at some point what you actually do on the field has to matter too.
It does.
Let me ask you a few different scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Alabama wins out in all these scenarios. Tell me if teams...
That's it. They're in.
All right. So an undefeated Baylor. An undefeated Baylor who would have then beaten Texas and Oklahoma to be undefeated.
Uh-huh.
Ahead of Alabama, you'd say no.
No.
Not, and I'd not be okay. Unless... And listen, and at some point in time, you've got to... I'm going to talk myself in knots here. I'm just going to say no.
All right. A one-loss Oregon, okay. whose only loss is to Auburn, and who beats Utah, another top five team, top seven team.
Here's what's really awful to me about this. Oregon is the one team that stretched, that took on a, and again, you got to do this stuff years and years and years in advance. I get that. But they chose to play Auburn, an SEC team, as a non-conference game. That has to be rewarded, especially when it happens early in the season. But because they happened to choose Auburn as the non-conference, and they nearly beat them too, okay? They nearly won that game.
Yeah, one play away.
It was a one-point game, all right? But because it's Auburn, they need Auburn now, seriously need Auburn now, to win against Georgia and Alabama. For Oregon to make this thing happen, they're going to have to win out, and they're going to have Auburn beat both those teams.
I just don't understand.
And the problem is if they beat one of them and then lose to Bama, which is going to happen per Luke's point, then Bama's going to jump Oregon based on that.
And here's the other thing. LSU is in no matter what now. Because if LSU, even if they lose to like Georgia in the championship, they're going to get in as one loss. What I don't like is that the committee has no consistency. All right, so why is Georgia top four? Why is Georgia top four? Because they have a really good win. They beat Notre Dame.
Because they're in the SEC.
But they lost to South Carolina.
But they have a really awful loss.
Yeah,
okay?
That's a really bad loss.
So then, therefore, I don't know, Oregon would have a better win in Utah than any win that Alabama would have.
Oregon's not jumping any of these teams in front of them if those teams don't lose.
The problem is,
Georgia has the worst loss of any team in the top 10 with one loss.
But again, they're in the SEC.
But in football, if you believe that every week is its own entity, basically its own season, this comparative shopping doesn't work in football. You beat that team, but I beat that team, so I'm better than you. The associative property of mathematics. It doesn't work in football because you're not getting the same team week to week to week to week. Personally, a top four that doesn't include Oklahoma. Oklahoma's got a bad loss. They got caught sleeping in the first half of that game, and they couldn't catch up. Oklahoma should be in this playoff, in my opinion, if they don't lose again.
I would like, it's contradictory to everything we just said, I would like to see Jalen Hurts against Alabama.
Wouldn't that be fabulous?
Yes.
And here's the other thing that will work itself out. I can't imagine that Minnesota would finish the season undefeated and not get in. Because then they would have beaten Penn State and Ohio State and Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And be undefeated and be in a power conference.
Over Ohio State. They wouldn't get in over Alabama.
That's right.
This is the thing. We're playing this game like Alabama doesn't have a free pass into the college football playoff every year. They do.
Yeah.
They just happen to be very good as well. But there are definitely scenarios where Alabama can lose again this year and still make this playoff. They get any tiebreaker is going to go to Alabama.
I know. And it's going to come down to that if this scenario plays out the way I think it's going to play out, that's why if you're a Pac-12 fan, a lot of people are pinning on Oregon to make this thing. It might be cleaner if Utah wins this thing.
Well, you see what you
said. Now, Utah's one loss is to USC, who could finish 9-3.
What you said before about Oregon, I mean, the Oregon's loss was against a good team, and it was in August.
Mm-hmm.
That is supposed to matter.
Right.
I mean, if you lost basically 2.5 months earlier than Alabama, that should matter.
And look at the SEC, the thing that bothers me the most about them is their privilege and their arrogance. They won't move off their 8 conference games because to make any of this appropriate, there's got to be some uniformity in what we're comparing here. When we're comparing conferences who play different amounts of conference games, thereby they play less amount of non-conference games, how do you compare schools like that? The SEC will not move off 8 conference games because they think their 8 conference games are equal 10 Pac-12 games. So why should we expose ourselves to playing another SEC team when we're already way better than you?
Okay.
And then as a result, they backfill their schedule with garbage.
And sometimes that could be an argument. But when you have an Alabama schedule and you don't actually play the good teams in the SEC, you don't play Georgia and you don't play Florida.
Yeah,
and you,
good point.
The one good team you play to, you lose to at home.
How do you back into the playoff after that? Because of the privilege. Listen, I'm with you, and this, I say this every year, but there is a scenario here where the SEC could strong arm their way into 3 out of the 4 berths, and that would be enough. That would be enough for people. I think at that point in time, you would just say, look, why don't you just make the college football playoff the SEC Invitational, the SEC Final Four, and let everybody else play for a secondary trophy? Because that at that point in time, you're just catering to one conference.
Well, Jarrett's right. I mean, Alabama's in the SEC, yes, but they haven't played any of the good teams from the SEC. And if Oregon really wins out, they will have won 12 in a row going into that final. I mean, come on. I don't even like Oregon.
You're right.
Disney's Frozen 2 hits theaters on November 22nd, but we're giving you the chance to see it before anyone else. Just text DAD to 620-620 and sign up to receive the monthly Big League Dad newsletter for your chance to win a family four-pack to see the advanced screening of Frozen 2. That's DAD to 620-620.
All right, coming up on the other side, the greatest guest in the history of radio joins us, Mark Schlereth on Arizona Sports 98.7 FM.